Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's your boy, JP. Just wanted to let you know, before you get into this episode of The Happy Hour, in which I talk to The Shield about the latest episode of BB Can 4, that this is kind of a gong show. It went a little bit all over the place, not as organized as our normal shows are, so apologies for that. There were also some audio issues towards the end of the episode, so just wanted to give you guys a heads up about that, and I apologize. I'll try to make sure that that doesn't happen moving forward. And there was also a little bit of cursing, nothing too crazy, but again, if you're around with small children and or you wanted to play this at work or something like that, then maybe this is not the episode for you. We will be live this week, Thursday, after the episode of BB Can 4, so not Wednesday. We're changing things up this week. I have work. Believe it or not, I have another job on top of school and the podcast. I know I'm crazy, but it's what pays the bills. So Thursday, I will be live after the episode at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern to break down everything that's happening on BB Can 4 with my good pal, Neda Kalantar, from Season 2 of Big Brother Canada. Should be lots of fun. Brent Wagamot's going to be there as well. I can't wait to get into it, and hopefully you guys will join us there. All right, sit back, relax, enjoy the show. Ryan Elder, take it away.
It's the reality TV Happy Hour with Jordan Parhar.
Canada 4 has come to a close, which means it's time for another edition of the Reality TV Happy Hour. What's going on, everybody? My name is Jordan Parhar, and I'm with you once again to recap the latest BB Can 4 episode on robhasawebsite.com. And with me, as always, are some former Big Brother Canada house guests. And you heard him at the top of the show before we even got started. He was trying to hold up a poster in order to cover the mess that is his kitchen right now. It's the great Alec Beal, ladies and gentlemen. Alec, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I noticed that you said, as always, we're joining you. That's not really true, so it's kind of unfair to your viewers to lie to them. I actually never knew how to pronounce Happy Hour, but you seem to have pronounced it as awkwardly as I could have possibly imagined it being pronounced, and it's your own show. So, all right, I'm glad we're on the Happy Hour with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Alec. Yes, Happy Hour is the correct pronunciation, in case anybody wants to know.
Like, why not just Rappy Hour?
Rappy Hour? Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it is open to interpretation. It just depends on how you say R-H-A-P, and I just assumed Rahap, that's just how I say that, because R-H-A-P. But I guess, yeah.
Honestly, we're in a group called the She-Isles or whatever, so I can't even hate on it, man, to be honest. Like...
All right, and his partner in crime is always here. You can see him on the Sideshow Friday nights on Slice, and this Thursday after the episode on Global, it's the great Peter Brown, ladies and gentlemen. Peter, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm happy to be on here. Anything that Rob does is fantastic, and you are part of Rob's empire, the Happy Hour. So... I thought I'd put my own version on it.
Well, that's pretty much what it was, Peter, because I was getting over laughing from, you know, the pre-show of all the hijinks that you guys watching this live completely missed. Alec showed us his bathroom. He was in the pre-show doing some things in there.
Yeah.
There was some
inside the shower. Nobody's ever gotten that privileges. Only on the Rapey Hour.
And also, too, I mean, Alec had his lighting was messed up, so he had this weird light, and he looked like kind of a serial killer, as Taryn Armstrong pointed out, and Alec said, who says I'm not? So, there you go.
I think you should start charging for the pre-show, like when all these hijinks are going on.
Maybe $20.
Pull a total ticket night. $20. But you only get the pre-show antics, like the 10 minutes of just nonsensical preamble that I assume goes on like every one of these shows, and then that's what they get. But they're not allowed to talk about it online. They have to sign like an NDA in order to sign up for the service.
Okay, that's that. Peter, thank you. This is why, you know, we're friends, is you give me really good ideas like this. So we could call it like the Happy Hour, I don't know, some sort of media program.
Show.
Oh, Rahab pre-show. There we go.
Wow.
The Rahab pre-show. Yeah, so I'll just take a page out of the Evil Dick playbook and start doing that. So you guys watching this live, stay tuned for that. There's one other person here who's always with us. We've always got some live feed correspondents with us today. And he's last but not least. It's the great Taryn Armstrong, ladies and gentlemen. Taryn, how are you?
I'm great. I tried to put my gummy bears, or my gummy koalas, sorry, on the poster, Alex poster, but apparently I'm not allowed to do that. So I just
serial killed them off.
Yeah.
And I was like, not in my house, buddy. Just put them over everyone's face but mine on this poster.
Oh, man. Yeah, and also, too, Alex, just so you know, we are going to go back. As we talked in the pre-show, we are going to Photoshop your face out of this and just put Emmett's face on your body during
absolutely
this thing.
Absolutely perfect.
Just
the
giving the audience
world
what they want.
Yeah. Actually, I think while we're on that topic, I think it's kind of – like, I love how that competition – there was one competition, and it was like, whose body would you rather scrub – off like waffle batter from, and it was my body that got chosen, but everybody that wasn't in on our like rigging that challenge competition chose Emmett. So like I can't win even if I stack the deck in that way. But yeah.
Poor Emmett, poor Alec Beal. All right, guys, let's set up everything that we're gonna talk about today. Off to a flying start on the Happy Hour this evening. It is Easter Sunday, so first off, happy Easter to all of you listening. We are live on a Google Hangout, so if you'd like to leave a question for us for later on in the show, you can leave a comment on the YouTube video, or you can tweet us using hashtag Happy Hour. In case you don't know how to spell that, that's hashtag R-H-A-P-P-Y hour, or happy hour with an R at the front. We will first talk about the episode, and then we will get into the spoilers and the live feed stuff a little later on in the show. So if you don't want to know the spoilers, don't worry. We will get into that later on, and stick around for this first part because it's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, guys, let's talk about the biggest story from tonight's episode, and that is Tim is the HOH, and he takes a very unique path towards his nominations, borrowing from Big Brother Australia and using this gummy bear koala point system. Peter, what did you think when you first heard that Tim was going this route with his HOH?
I loved it, because the Australian way of nominating is even different than the UK style, in which you just go in and give two people. The Australian one, there's a very interesting point system, and you have to give Big Brother a very specific reason that Big Brother can turn down. So Tim, having obviously went through that process for a long amount of time, was able to kind of become Big Brother in that instance for all of the Canadian house guests here. So what I most loved about it is that not only is he getting a ton of information from people, as you kind of saw in the episode, everyone starts looking at everyone else in a different way that they might not have before. Traditionally in Big Brother Canada and Big Brother USA, it's one person nominating two people, and then there's the potential third, and it's the chaos is kind of contained to that. But here you have everybody going like, well, he might have nominated me, and she might have nominated me. And it starts to create more organic, you know, emotional chaos in the house, which is something that is sometimes hard to orchestrate as an HOH because it can be so direct. So I was so happy that Tim brought this in, and I loved seeing the process of how everyone reacted to it differently.
Alec, what did you think about this? Do you think that this is going to be good or bad for Tim's game moving forward?
I agree with Peter entirely, 100%.
All right.
Can you imagine if that was just the show and it was just like, you know, it's his opinion? I'd be like, yes, I agree 100%. No, man, I'm going to play he says, she says with him. Put on my glasses.
Ooh.
Sarah Hanlon on this one. I mean, obviously, as an audience member, I think it's great to do that. Like I love seeing it switched up. It was a really entertaining episode. It's not the typical, like, okay, I have these two targets, whatever, whatever. But I do think he kind of, like, I don't think it's a good strategy for him in terms of winning the game. I mean, yeah, you get a lot of information, but you also get everybody knowing that you have all the information in the house. Like, that puts a massive target on you, and it's clear that, like, he has no idea what he's doing in the North American format. Like, he's saying all the wrong things, but somehow doing, like, the right things within the house. Like, he'll be like, I didn't want to – oh, God, I can't even try. Holy God, Jesus. But he'll be like, I don't want to, like, fly under the radar. It's like, no, I mean, you don't have to, like, fly that far over the radar always. It doesn't even, like, that'll never help you. And, like, he's just, like – he's the one that's, like, tripping over himself. So if he wins, it kind of speaks to the fact that, like, Big Brother's just super random sometimes. And, like, I think that is almost what he's doing in a way. If he, like, there's two ways that I could think about it. One, he has no familiarity with North American game whatsoever, thinks that he's doing the right thing, but is totally ostensibly doing the wrong thing. The second is that he's totally making a parody of our format of the game, saying that, okay, you guys want to treat this as like a sport of the mind and have there's some kind of like competitive advantage. I'm just going to go throw some wild shit at the wall. And, you know, I'm still going to come off scot-free because it doesn't matter. This game is like crazy and wild and stupid shit sometimes works. So I mean, it's entertaining either way, and it's kind of yet to be seen whether it's going to help or hurt his game. But I think, you know, as a North American fan, and I've never watched the Australian one, I do think, I mean, you have to kind of think it would hurt his game.
Oh, yeah, I think for sure, because going into this week, I mean, Tim was not – he's so beloved, yeah, and popular in the house, and now – you know, he doesn't get a lot of, he does still get blood on his hands by doing it. So really he's kind of put himself in a tough situation. Taryn, based on watching the live feeds and everything you've seen on there, are we on the right track with this? Is Tim now is he in a worse position now, than he could have been had he not taken this approach?
I think so. You know, I've said before that, the game Tim is trying to play is kind of similar to the game Dr. Will played, in that he seems like he's trying to be above the game. He's outside, yeah, of the game. And there's a reason why Dr. Will never won an HOH, because the second Tim is an HOH and he's nominating people and he's having to play that strategic game, he's dropping himself down to their level, and they're starting to see him as human. And they're starting to see, oh, he is part of the game now. He is really trying to win. So that perception change, I think, is going to really hurt him down the line.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how, you know, next week unfolds, depending on who wins HOH, because first off, this season's just been great, but I just want to see how Tim recovers from this whole situation. Another big thing or point of contention with this episode was Dallas's behavior towards this whole Tim in general, really. He's going to Jared saying, you know, Jared, we got to watch for Tim now, we got to watch for him and all this kind of stuff. And now, you know, now Tim's like, oh, he's like, okay, Dallas, who are you going to nominate? And he's like, no, like, he's like, I'm not going to play. Basically, like, he just took his ball and went home. Or he took, like, the Cartman strategy of, like, you know, screw you guys, I'm going home. That's basically what Dallas did.
I never put it together, but he even sounds kind of like Cartman.
Yeah, Dallas Cartman. There we go.
Right?
So, Peter, what did you think about this, Dallas's approach? Because, you know, part of me feels like he kind of is the voice of reason, because he's saying, you know, to everyone, like, why are we giving into this? Why are we doing this? But at the same time, you know, he did kind of come across a little bit poorly by not playing when everyone else did.
Yeah, Dallas's Neanderthalic buffoonery continues to be more compelling to watch every week. The funny thing is that for all of his kind of grossness, like the shot of him out smoking, scratching his belly, like, kind of disgusting guy to watch, but that, like, he's got his, like, he's not a dumb guy. Like, I think Dallas, for all of his kind of surface shortcomings, as you might say, or the things people might naturally kind of nitpick about him, he's actually pretty level-headed when it comes to the game in terms of strategy and kind of knowing where to be and why. That's why he got so upset with Maddie for doing her very confusing thing, which I'm sure we'll get to. But, you know, I think Dallas is actually a pretty good Big Brother player, and I think what makes him most unique is he's not afraid to put things on Front Street. He'll call people out. You know, everyone knows what cards he's got in his hand and who he's directly going for, which we've seen be a successful strategy in the past. So I think Dallas is a very compelling, unexpectedly compelling character this year. And even though he didn't really play along with Tim's rules, he kind of tried, and he's like, well, can I give him to myself? And that's ultimately what he did. But I think that's just kind of par for the course. That's what you would expect from Dallas, to kind of, you know, be his own man. And that's what makes him likable.
Yeah, and I think it's I love watching the evolution of some of these house guests as they play the game, but also like how the fans are perceiving them, because like you are saying, Peter, like to start right off the bat, Dallas was somebody who people were just like, oh, I hate Dallas so much. But now, I mean, as much as you said, I mean, he is a bit of a buffoon. He's not that bad, right, Alec?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was one of the, like, pre-show, I didn't like Dallas. I just didn't think I'd get along with him. I actually even told Willow, I was like, man, if this guy wasn't from the East Coast, he would have, like, no fans whatsoever. Because I think, like, East Coast, you kind of got to root for your coast, especially on the East Coast when there's only one player. So I think he had some fans going into it, but you're right. I think as he goes through, like, people like seeing different things. Like, people like seeing characters they're not used to. And I think Dallas is one of those characters we're just not used to seeing in Big Brother Canada. It's like, we rarely see this brazen, as Peter put it, Neanderthalic baboon, like, running roughshod through the house, just saying and doing literally whatever the fuck he wants. Like, he's a pretty entertaining dude. I mean, yeah, I mean, but what you're saying about the fans, kind of the evolution of the fans' perspective, that is one of the more fascinating things. And it's one of those things that you don't really put your, like, finger on until you're actually outside. And, like, where you leave can really leave a lasting impression on, like, your legacy, right? Like, Raul. Say Raul left in that double eviction, people would have hated Raul forever. If he just, like, got evicted and then left, people would have been like, fuck, Raul. But today, if you watch the tweets, it's like, oh, my God, Raul, the, like, Mexican spice. Like, once he said Mexican spice, everybody starts loving Raul. It's now he's, like, he's one of the more, like, I would be surprised if he didn't go up in one of these rankings. Maybe not Jokers. I have no idea. But, like, one of these, like, house guest rankings, I'm sure with that Mexican spice, everyone that I saw on Twitter was like, oh, my God, I love Raul. Whereas if you look last week, it would have been like, Raul, fuck, what does he offer, blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, I mean, the evolution of the fans thing is pretty interesting. And Dallas is case in point on that. I flipped on him completely.
Yeah, like if he went home week two, Dallas would be, you know, it's universally hated for the most
reviled.
Part.
Yeah.
But if he goes home now, I think a lot of people would be like, you know what, I enjoyed Dallas. He's got something that's endearing about him.
Yep,
so,
yep.
I mean, that's how I felt about him at least. Taryn, to getting back to the whole, Tim situation with calling people in and getting them to talk to him, and Dallas was clearly upset about that. Did he try to campaign to the other house guests? Like, how hard did he try to get people to agree not to go forward with this?
He didn't try too hard to get them to not go forward with it. He actually he went to Jared and said, hey, we should come with an arrangement that so that we won't put each other up, but Jared disagreed. He also tried to get them all to stop doing it as a whole, and we saw that, and it didn't work at all. So then he just said, okay, everybody, just nominate me. I'm good. Just nominate me. Everybody put your points on me. I'm going to put my points on myself, and that's what we saw.
Why did Dallas do this?
Basically, he figured that no matter what was going to happen, he was going to go on the block at some point or another. So he figured, as long as I'm up on the block, I get to play for Vito. So just I'm going to make sure I'm up there.
Okay, interesting.
Wow, so. That's wow. That's really not smart.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that had he coordinated with Ramsey and Maddie, he could have gotten anybody he wanted up on the block next to him, but they didn't coordinate at all, and so we saw, you know, Ramsey go up next to him instead.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I found, like, super fascinating from this episode was the idea that Maddie just immediately was like, yeah, give me – I'm putting all my points on Dallas. I don't want to be associated with him anymore. I just found that to be so strange, and I just don't really understand – what exactly happened to that alliance? And just it was just completely chaotic the last Thursday and everything with went down with that. Peter, what did you think about Maddie's move to get rid of LaVita last week? I mean, she's saying like that. Yes, it was a good move for me, Dallas. It was a good move for me. You know, now eight people are good with me. You know, like that's why I had to do it. Was it even that good of a move for her?
Ultimately. No, probably not, because we're not even to jury yet. So, you know, you fast forward that move 3 or 4 weeks, and that style of move is probably pretty colossal. But at this point in the game, we literally, like, you know, just said we haven't even reached jury yet, and she's not only sacrificing her own allies for a what would appear to be a personal vendetta against somebody that she just doesn't get along with, but she also inadvertently salvages her alliance's direct rivals. So she kind of does the worst thing in ever, like, no matter how you slice it, there's no good that can come out of it. But from her own perspective, what she thinks good will come out of it is, okay, now I can integrate into the middle. Now I can be part of this this voting block in the middle that really is controlling the game. And I guess you can kind of be like, all right, well, if she's aware of the fact that the middle controls the game and wants to get into that, you can kind of say, that's good. However, from the middle's perspective, it's like, okay, this girl just turned her back on her alliance. She made a crazy emotional move and has demonstrated herself to be entirely unreliable and untrustworthy. So not only has she ostracized herself from the people that were directly in line with her for the entirety of the game up until this point, she's now completely cut ties with any potential alliance mates in the middle simply because she's demonstrated herself to be unreliable for the entire group. So I think Maddie is in an absolutely brutal position right now.
Alec, what do you think Maddie should have done with that HOH? Should she have just targeted Jared and Raul? Should she have gone for someone else? What would you have done if you were in her shoes after that win?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where if you pull the trigger on Raul and Jared, you kind of got to have to have – you're going to have one of them go home in order for it to be a successful HOH for you. Like, you can't get cold feet in the middle of the night. I don't know. I mean, going from a person that wanted that someone from that side of the alliance out, which would be Maddie, that's my perspective of what Maddie wanted in that situation. Yeah, by putting somebody like Tim or Mitch or somebody that she is confident is not going to go home over Raul, just send Raul out. So, you know, you don't have this powerful Jared and Raul now kind of coming after you. But, I mean, it sounds like she was afraid of LaVita as well. So, I mean, it's not in her mind, I guess, a bad move. I'm struggling to really understand the dynamics more so this season than most other seasons because it has largely been an entertaining season. And I think the formula for that is more wild card, goofball, fun conversations, fun games, which I absolutely love. It just makes the gameplay a little bit more difficult to follow if you're not watching the feeds or the After Darks, which I like. I mean, sometimes I do that, but this season I've kind of haven't done that at all. So for me, it's really hard to figure out where some of these house guests lie. Like Ramsey being put up by the majority of the house was very confusing to me. Maddie selling Dallas out, also very confusing. Yeah, it was just kind of, I mean, I'm struggling as a casual fan watching just the episodes to really know where allegiances lie. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Jared puts up Raul next week because, like, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, Taryn, can you give some insight into that? Because you've been keeping an eye pretty closely on the feed. So why did Ramsey go up? Was it just because of his association with Dallas?
Yeah, basically. You know, in the first week, Ramsey played way too hard. He was making final two deals with everyone, spilling info everywhere. And ever since then, he's been slowly rebuilding his reputation back, but it's still not entirely there, and he's so closely connected with Dallas and Maddie that it was an easy second person to put up, and it was mostly Cassandra who managed to get him on the block, putting all four of her points on him, and because they've had a rocky relationship. Ramsey has always seen Cassandra as somebody who's talking to everybody. She's always seen him as somebody that's sketchy and she can't trust. So they've had this kind of animosity between each other. And so she was hoping that she could get out either Ramsey or Maddie instead of Dallas because she actually wants to work with Dallas because she thinks she can use him.
Okay. Interesting stuff. Again, it is complicated to watch, but because all these things seem to be constantly shifting, but that's what makes this season such a beautiful thing to see. Let's talk about LaVita and Kelsey being locked in the, I don't know what we want to call that. Peter, is there an official name for where they are?
It's the BB Can Grand Secret Suite.
The BB Can Grand Secret Suite. Thank you very much. So the BB Can Grand Secret
really,
Suite.
Really put some time on that name. Jeez.
It's important. Very important. Very important.
What about Hundo? Oh, no, we already used that. 1919. No, use that. All right, let's just go with fucking
Secret Suite.
Whatever. Secret Suite. There you go.
Well,
home.
I mean, maybe they were thinking Secret Room, but they also used that too.
Oh,
so they were like,
Here's one thing that I want to point out, and I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here, but forgive the rant. If you're going to go ahead and say, Paige, you have been given an early checkout. Go out of your way to change the verbiage that's been used every single season of Big Brother to not say evicted because it's a hotel. I get it. Stick with that gimmick. Don't call it a double eviction and just completely lose it. And then when somebody gets evicted, say, you have been given an early checkout. You have been evicted. It's like she said it twice. If you listen on the first eviction when it was Kelsey, she says, you've been given an early checkout, and then she says, you have been evicted. It's like, make up your goddamn mind. Is it a hotel? Is it a house? Or maybe that's a twist. Maybe it's just set up like a hotel, but it's actually a house. Maybe it's an Airbnb. Who fucking knows?
Yes, the BB Ken Airbnb.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, basically.
It was a classic tell because it's a fake double eviction. She was trying to oversell it by saying both things.
Yeah, oh. Classic tell. Classic tell.
There you go.
So what do you do, Taryn? Are you a student, or like how do you watch the live feeds all the time? I'm interested to know a little bit who you are.
I'm actually a full-time video producer at a company. So basically, I mean, I'm always listening to podcasts and multitasking like at all times. So with the feeds, I just listen to the feeds all the time while I'm doing stuff.
That's awesome. You work at home and just kind of the feeds are on all the time.
Well, I go to the office. And I can, like, have feeds on. I can have the updates going. You know, if I go to bed before they go to bed, then I'll wake up and I'll read all the summaries and stuff to make sure I'm on top of stuff.
Does Rob pay you? Does Jordan pay you?
Well, I do. We won't get into that, Alec, but I do not pay Taryn because I can barely afford to live, as Alec, we've discussed many times, you know, how Willow and I are borderline homeless. But let's,
I need to sponsor Jordan to keep him afloat.
I'm just happy you and Willow are living together now, Jordan. I think that's great.
Yeah, it's really great. Willow's in my closet over there in my room. It's good times. That's what happens when you go on a Canadian reality TV show. You know, you have everything going for you in your life, and then you walk away, and everything's gone, and you just have to start from scratch. It's actually quite sad, and I don't want to get into it too much because I'll probably start crying.
All right, next topic. This kind of went to a dark place a little bit here.
This is what happens.
It's a happy hour, bro. This is not the sad hour. It's not the Rasad hour.
The Rasadi hour.
This is not the Rasadi hour.
Okay, so Peter, let's talk about Levita and Kelsey being locked in the BB Can Grand Secret Suite. The very, very well done. The naming of that. They talked a little bit about how Mitch is kind of, Levita mentioned, hey, Mitch was with me and he's giving me information, which I'm sure Kelsey did not know because she thought, wait, Mitch is with me. They were also talking about how Tim is kind of playing everybody. So do you think that when one of these people comes back into the house next week that they're just going to completely destroy Tim and or Mitch's games as did a certain somebody last season?
You know what? I think Tim probably is going to be fine simply because he's Tim. And it's kind of like Taryn was saying, he's kind of above the game. And even though he kind of went down to their level, I still think he'll float back up to the top. Mitch, however, is someone that I've been saying for a long time isn't playing anywhere nearly as good as a lot of people are giving him credit for. Like, I think Mitch is a pretty switched-on guy. But I think a lot of people in the house have become aware of this, especially in like the last 2 weeks or so. A lot of people are looking at him as someone who's good with everybody, has a lot of allies, seems to be low-key, you know, doesn't ruffle any feathers. And like that's the kind of person, especially in a season like this, which is so chaotic, that person starts to stand out simply because they're not standing out in a weird way. So now because Kelsey and Levita are stuck in this room and they can swap stories, and the first thing they say is, oh, I was aligned with Mitch and a bunch of other people, and oh, I was aligned with Mitch and a bunch of other people. So I think that just a little nudge, a little push in the direction of, like, Mitch is really dangerous could, like, spiral his game out of control in a hurry. So if, you know, let's say, for example, you know, they come back in and they just want to put everything on Front Street and call out people's games. You know, we've been watching, we've been organizing, you know, all of the information that has been collected over the time we were in the house, and then we were able to swap stories, and the most dangerous guy in here is the one that, you know, was sitting quietly in the corner. I think Mitch could be in a world of trouble very, very quickly, but what will be most compelling is if he is as good as a lot of people are projecting or hoping that he is, if he's able to get out of that, because I feel like that could be coming for Mr. Moffitt.
I hope he can get out of it, because I love seeing Mitch play. I think he's doing a really great job so far. Alec, do you think Mitch has what it takes to get himself out of a sticky situation if that's where he happens to be next week?
Yeah, I do. I actually do think he has the ability. But I do agree with Peter that also that twist really will hurt him more than it'll hurt anybody else, because what they'll want to do is come in and say something about this like information that they've been given. And so like the thing that'll make them seem like they have some kind of information that nobody's thinking about is like, hey, look at this guy that nobody's really thought of. We thought of him, and it turns out he's working with everybody, which, I mean, it's really just like probably some dumb alliance that he kind of just told her was happening. And Lovita in her mind is like, this is my strongest alliance. I got to be super loyal to it. Whereas Mitch probably doesn't even remember like being in that alliance. But I don't know. I do think like just the way that he's played, the kind of the command he has over certain Big Brother staples, like throwing competitions, but not throwing them blatantly, shaking somebody's hand or something dumb, something idiotic.
Who would
like
do that?
Who would do that? Some moron would probably do that. No, I feel like he's got a good command of the North American game. So, I mean, in one way, I would love to see Tim, if I was like an anarchist and like whatever, I would love to see him win. But at like the classic Big Brother fan in me is rooting for Mitch, just because I feel like he is playing the most strategic game. Him or Cassandra, who's kind of playing it in a more entertaining way, I think. She's not all strategy, but in the back of her head, you can see the wheels are turning, and I think she's got a good grasp of the game as well.
Yeah, I love Cassandra. I made a bet with Rob in the preseason that she would make jury, and I'm feeling good.
Oh, yeah, I think we'll
see what happens. All right, guys, let's hop into the live feed portion of the show. We can get into who won the POV, what's going to happen with that, who looks like is going to go home. So,
oh, that's all happened already?
POV has happened, not the ceremony, but we'll get into what the intentions and all that kind of stuff. So if you do not want to know who has won the power veto or any of that kind of stuff, now is your time to tune out. So we'll be back Thursday this week, not Wednesday. Wednesday, I actually have work. I actually have a part-time job that I'm somehow keeping. So no show Wednesday night. We will be live Thursday night. After the episode, after the sideshow, so I believe that will be at what time? Peter, what time's the sideshow on Thursday?
9:30 Eastern.
So 10 p.m. Eastern, we'll be live with Netta Kalantar from BB Cantu to break down everything that's been going down, talking about the eviction, talking about who's going back in the house, all that kind of stuff. So it should be a great time, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys there. Okay, spoiler time.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler.
Warning.
A spoiler.
Warning means that an actual
spoiler
against this country has been detected and that protective action should be taken.
Taryn, what's happening? Who won the power of veto?
Is Ramsey?
Ramsey won the veto! Alec called it. Wow, amazing. Alec Beal spoiling the show
for
everybody.
Baby.
The Rossetti hour is going strong. Well done, Alec. Okay, so Taryn, obviously Ramsey's gonna use it. What's going through Tim's head right now?
Well, he was initially thinking of letting the power veto winner choose the replacement nominee, but he's kind of backed off of that idea, and he's just gonna nominate the next highest person with the gummy koalas, which is Maddie, and he's informed her that she's going on the block. Everyone knows, and so people are starting to talk about which one they're going to evict.
Interesting. Okay, so Maddie and Dallas are on the block. Peter, if you're in that house right now, who would you try to target?
Well, I'd like to say that I think it's interesting that he at least toyed with the idea, Tim, of it being the veto holder who gets to decide, because that's Showdown. So in his season, the winner of Showdown, which is like this HOH veto like hybrid power style competition, oftentimes like it kind of changed every once in a while, but for the most part, whoever won it could choose, like they could swap somebody off. So I think that's interesting that like he almost went full Australia and was able to do that. But obviously Ramsey wouldn't pick Maddie, which I assume is kind of what him and Cassandra had been cooking up for a few days anyway. So it's good that Maddie was third in that list, which obviously shows that the middle is still, at least in their head, doing their plan from, you know, a week or so ago, which is this side, this side, this side, this side, like third wheel and unnamed grunge alliance, whatever they are. Anyway, so back to your question. If I was in the house right now, what I would be going to evict? I guess I think what's better for the show in the house is probably to get rid of Maddie. She's untrustworthy. She's unreliable. There's nothing that she really offers to a potential alliance. And, you know, it's kind of like she'd be a victim of her own, you know, crazy, bold move. And it's like, okay, it'd be a lesson for future house guests that are just like, oh, make bold moves, do crazy things every week and you know, entertain Canada. It's like, okay, well, Maddie did that. She made the craziest, boldest move possible. And I think it would be very narratively apropos if that sends her right back out the door just 1 week later. I think Dallas offers more to people in the house. He's a much bigger target still. And, like, this season kind of seems to be, like, let's keep the big targets around so that, you know, like, other people don't become targets, you know, by process of elimination, which has been really unfortunate for the girls. So if Maddie goes, that's another girl gone, which I think would be crazy. And I kind of expect to happen. I think Maddie's going to walk out the door this Thursday.
Wow, that's – oh, my God. Could you imagine six girls going home in a row? Alec, that would be your worst nightmare being in the BB
camp. Oh, my God. Dude, it would be – man, that would not be good. But, I mean, here's the thing. Like, to take it to, like a game thing, that's a – I don't know. Anyway, I think that's –
All right. Hold on, Alec. Hold on. Take two.
Okay.
All right, there we go.
All right, I think it would be very narratively apropos if what happened was that people realized that Dallas is biggest target. He's made it known. He's Godfrey Manguiza blood on his hands. He wants Jared. So I feel like if you're not Jared, you're going to be like, okay, well, this guy wants Jared. No fucking clue who Maddie's going to go after next. So could be me. I'm going to save my own ass and vote Maddie out. And, you know, it's possible that, you know, with no showmances or whatever, they're not really thinking this guy-girl ratio at all. They're really kind of just thinking human beings that will help me in the game. And if those happen to be girls, then they happen to be girls. If they happen to be guys, they happen to be guys. And if Maddie doesn't look like she's going to help your game more than Dallas will, then you're going to chop her no matter what if she's guy, girl, or other. So I think we will be getting another member of the Vancouver BB team this week. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's kind of neat, actually. This season, one of the better things about this season is that it seems that the bigger characters are not pissing as many people off, or, like, the voting patterns aren't going with who's pissing the most people off. It's going with kind of some other thing. I don't know. Maybe in this house, it's just like these big personalities all kind of like appreciate each other as the big personalities they are. In our season, if you were a big personality, you were target numero uno no matter what. And in your season, Jordan, you got rid of some pretty big characters in the beginning stages. And that's usually how the seasons go. I think maybe one of the more kind of the things that makes this season a little more entertaining is that, you know, no offense to Sherry and Paige and Christine and, you know, people like that, we didn't really get to know them very well, and it's possible they are big personalities, but they hadn't really come through on the show, and it's like, it's one of those things where it's like the lesser of the two nominees that are entertaining are going home, and we're getting left with these really great Dallases, we're getting left with the Tims, we're getting left with the Jareds, the big, strong combatants, the personalities, the entertainers, if you will, and I think that's one of the crazy things about this season. So if we're going to carry on, I think it would be narratively apropos if Maddie did leave.
Well done.
So I heard Peter say that. I have no idea what it means.
Peter, let me throw this back to you. Why do you think that this is, that these, like, huge personalities just for whatever reason are sticking around? And does this mean the fact that they're all still there, that this is going to be, like, the best, like, end game we've really ever seen in Big Brother Canada?
You know what? I think it is. I think we are shaping up. Like, we're not even to jury yet. And the things that have been, like, this is normally what you would expect at that, like, you know, like that midway point of the game, like, you know, a week or two into jury where people are really starting to feel the pressure, starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. No, they're going all out right away. And I think that's fascinating. And part of it is, like, I keep going back a little bit to, I know the brothers, this was kind of their, like, I don't want to give them too much credit, but I know that the brothers at the beginning, their strategy fundamentally was keep all of the big targets in play to the best of our ability so that we as a pair and stand out like a sore thumb will be, you know, down in the pecking order for longer than we might otherwise be in a normal scenario. And I think that kind of mentality, whether it was direct or indirect, started to, you know, float out to the other people in the house, because you have a lot of, like, and especially in the season, which you have two literal wild cards. So you start to see, it's like, okay, like, this is a season of big personalities. And so if you start to cut those down, the little flashlight can turn into a big spotlight really quickly. And so that's why these people are going. And I agree with Alec that I don't think it's a guy-girl. Like, I don't think this is a battle of the sexes thing whatsoever, because you have guys eliminating girls and you have girls eliminating girls. They're not targeting them because they're women, and they're not targeting the guys because they're guys. It's. I completely agree with Alec. It's like, does this person have value to my game, yes or no? If the answer to that question is no, then they cut them. And that's basically what it has been. And I think that's a very unique evolution of the Big Brother game, because so many times you get bogged down in these alliances or these voting blocks, or like, it can become a battle of the sexes. And I really think this year it's like they're just like, maybe it's because they're not super familiar with Big Brother, and they're, it's kind of like feels like a more organic, natural new season. And they're just looking around. It's like, what do you have to offer? Is it nothing? Okay, then I'm going somewhere else. And I think that's really refreshing to see. It creates chaotic gameplay, and like Alex said, it's pretty hard to follow sometimes. That's what makes the season so great.
Alec, what do you have to offer to me, like, on this podcast? Is there anything you can offer to me right now?
I mean, it sounded like you needed a job. I mean, you could always kind of like follow me around as like a temp or an intern.
That would be great.
I could teach you how to be cool, how to wear, you know, emojis on your shirt, even though you're 29 years old. I could teach you cleaning. If you look in the background, my kitchen is immaculate. And I can also teach you a little bit of humility, because I'm basically the best at that. So that's what I have to offer you.
So I can become your intern. That is what you're saying. So I think yeah. I got to do this, Alec. And it's not a paid position, of course. But
of course not. No.
But
not
I can work. But once you start becoming like rich and famous, then like I'll get like a cut.
Well, you'll. I mean, no. I'm thinking Taryn maybe could kind of live feed some of our interactions and our kind of shenanigans we get into, our adventures, if you will. Maybe you could live feed us.
Yeah, I'll follow you around and film you.
Ooh,
yeah,
Peter could narrate it too.
All right, okay, Taryn, let's talk about who is actually going home tonight, or not tonight, who's supposed to go home. Because if we're talking about who's going home tonight, Alec has proven that.
I'm already here, baby.
But yeah. So this Thursday, what's it looking like on the feeds right now? The veto hasn't been used yet. The ceremony hasn't gone down. But things change very frequently, especially in this season. But where is it lying as of this hour?
Yeah, so it's interesting because we were just talking about how the big targets have been staying in the game, and I do think that. That is really credited to the strong middle that has been a part of this season. The people in the middle have been playing a strong game as opposed to like a following game that they usually play, where they usually follow along with what the head of household wants. This season, they've been kind of going against what the head of household wants in order to keep the smaller target, to actually go home, to keep the bigger target in the game. I think Peter was right to point out that the brothers were probably the initiation of that, because the brothers and Mitch, they've actually been the only people in the house that have voted the right way every time. And I think Mitch in particular has gotten his way with the vote every single week. So if we're looking at who's going to go home this week, I think we should be looking at who does Mitch want to leave. He's told Maddie that he wants to keep her, but for all we know, he could be lying. I think he also told Dallas he wants to keep him. So right now it's still up in the air. I do know that Tim is very strongly wanting Dallas to leave at the moment because Dallas proved himself to be a very strong competitor, winning two vetoes in a row when he didn't need to. And he's making Cassandra and Nikki, who both want Maddie out, to promise him that they're going to vote out Dallas instead of Maddie. Cassandra is going to try and convince Tim to change his mind. She's going to be working the house to try and get Maddie out all week. So it's still up in the air. I think it'll come down to what does Mitch want, what does Tim want, and how effective is Cassandra at trying to get rid of Maddie.
All right. Wow. So as of right now, then, if you were to guess, Taryn, if the vote was tonight, what do you think what would happen?
I think if the vote was tonight, more people are on board with taking Maddie out. But Cassandra would have to get Tim on board very quickly.
Okay. All right. So this is So again, this is just as we were talking about. I mean, that's really gonna blow my mind if that's what happens if Maddie leaves and we've got six girls in a row going home on this season. Let's get into some of your questions, guys. If you want to tweet us and give some questions tonight, if you're watching us live, you can tweet me. I'm at Jordan Parhar. You can use the hashtag RaHappyHour, not hashtag RaSaddyHour. And you can also comment on the YouTube video as well, and we will get into those. Okay, this one is from here we go. This one is from Bliss44. Bliss44 says, Maddie is the laughingstock of BB Can 4, if not BB history. Well, this is not really a question.
That's already a question there, Bliss44.
It's more so of a statement. But this, what I wanted to ask is, what do you guys think about Maddie getting all of this hate, Alec? What do you think about that? Because it seems like on Twitter and social media, people have really turned on her.
Yeah, man. I feel like if you're gonna talk on social media, just try your best not to hate on people. One, because it's like, you know, they're people, whatever. That's kind of boring, sappy shit. But what actually will happen to you if you start tweeting negative shit all the time? People just don't want to hear you anymore, so they'll unfollow you and block you and shit. Like, just think about what other people want to see. They don't want to see negativity all the time. They want to see some positivity. So if you think about your tweets, be clever about them, and try your best to say nice things. Like, you can say an equally funny, nice thing as well. You know, it's just like, people don't like seeing negativity and shit. I don't know, that's just my own personal opinion, but I feel like a lot of people don't like that. Like, I don't want to go on Twitter just to see, like, negative shit. Like, if I want to see that, I'll turn on the news. Which I never do.
Yeah, Peter, what did you think about, I mean, I think part of it is, you know, the move is what got Maddie so much hate. And I've gotten a lot of hate for some of the things I did on Big Brother, which were very well deserved. But where do you think Maddie's move ranks in terms of, like, worst moves of all time? Because I think a lot of people were saying, this is the worst move ever. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe she did that. But to me, I felt like that was a little bit of hyperbole.
It is because it's the thing that here's the catch 22 of it. Fans don't really know what they want, and I think this move proved that. So people constantly harp, you know, kind of what I was saying before about you got to make big moves, you got to do crazy things every week, like entertain us, do the, you know, things that are against logic and against reason, simply for the sake of shaking up the house. And Maddie handed that to the viewing audience on a silver platter. It's a dream scenario for chaos, really, for what Maddie did, because it was completely off the board. Nobody saw it coming. Like, I was watching it and I was like, all right, well, Jared and Raul are up. One, like, obviously, duh, she's going with what her alliance wants. And then, nope, LaVita's out. Like, and I, like, that, it just blew my mind. And, like, how many times in Big Brother can you be watching a show and have your mind actually blown? So I think the fans got exactly what they were asking for, and then they were just pissed off because either the person went home that they didn't want to have, like, maybe they were all LaVita fans and they were mad that LaVita went, or maybe they all just hated the third wheel and were mad that they got saved and Maddie's the scapegoat for that. But I think if you look at it on paper, it's the type of thing that fans have been demanding for years, and they finally got it. And how do they react? Negatively. I don't think it was a good move, but it's the type of move that people have been wanting. So the lesson is, fans are never satisfied.
Speaking of someone else who got a bit of some backlash, Taryn, can you tell us about what went on with the live feeds yesterday? Cassandra and Dallas were talking about an all-star season.
Oh, yeah. Dallas was basically saying that he was, if he goes out this week, he hopes that he did enough to get on All-Stars.
Oh, poor Dallas. That, I feel like that's like the worst thing that you can say to get somebody to or people to like you or to actually get on All Stars. Poor kid, poor guy. That's awful.
I mean, I'm not a Dallas fan, but at least he's not laying down. Like, he cares enough about the game that he's already thinking like, man, this sucks. I probably lost, but I'm going to keep fighting, but I hope I get to play this again someday, like, already, as opposed to, like, half the house that's left going, like, yeah, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah, that's true.
But when you think about it, though, he's already playing. it's like being the fourth inning of baseball and being like, man, I can't wait for tomorrow's game. Like, what?
Yeah, it's the opposite end of the spectrum of the people who just want to go home. It's like, man, I wish I was playing the game right now.
Yeah, very odd, strange that would come up. Okay, here's one from Kimberly Jakeman. She says, will LaVita or Kelsey return to the house? Will there be a comp or a vote somehow? Peter, what do you think is going to happen Thursday in terms of how we're going to determine whether Kelsey or LaVita is entering the house?
You know what? That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Is how are they going to get back in? Frankly, I'm still surprised that there is a room. You know, when they first met, the tension was so thick, you could cut it with a very, very dull knife. And so I'm shocked that they've become friends. They seem friendly in there. They've kind of become their own little alliance in that room, and they're sharing stories, and they seemingly become pretty good together. In terms of how they're going to get back in the house, it could be anything. It could, like, we've seen a whole lot of examples to draw from in Big Brother Canada, even though it's still kind of in its infancy. So I feel like it might be totally off the board, might be something that nobody's expecting, nobody's guessing, simply because we've seen a lot of, like, every year has featured someone coming back, and it's been different every time. Maybe it'll be a combination of all those things. Maybe it'll be a multi-stage thing. Or like I said on Sideshow, maybe they're just going to have to sword fight, and the whoever is still left living at the end of it will get to go back.
I would be remiss to not mention their plan right now for going back into the house. They spent like 2 hours probably coming up with this mastermind genius plan that they're super excited about implementing when they get back into the house, which is basically they're going to go in, if Kelsey goes in, she's going to pretend to have a fight with Raul, pretend that she got some information about him that was bad, and tell everybody that she hates Raul now, and she's going to secretly tell Raul and Jared that Mitch is against them, or that Mitch was playing them, but then also try to secretly reel him in, and then all target Tim and Nikki and Cassandra, and various other parts that are just, like, way too much. Like, if you go back into the house as a returning player, you just want to, like, fall asleep and, like, attach yourself, like, say, I'm doing nothing, I'm just going to follow your lead. And they're like, yeah, we have these, like, super intricate strategies about where they're going to go and acting, and it's going to be crazy.
Well, so that was Kelsey's plan. Is that LaVita's plan, too?
LaVita's plan is, LaVita initially wanted to go to Mitch and be like, hey, Mitch, I know you're playing everybody, but I'm going to keep it on the down low. Which basically guarantees that Mitch is going to just take her out at his soonest opportunity.
Oh, my gosh.
But she's also, she wants to try and work with Jared and Raul, but that's obviously not going to happen. Like, even if she says, yeah, Kelsey told me a bunch of stuff, Jared's going to be like, yeah, but I'm not going to attach myself to you. I'm not going to get evicted for you. Like, attaching myself to you is a terrible move for my game, so why would I do that? But they don't understand that that's going to happen.
I mean, to me, it sounds like Lovita's really got her thinking cap on.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Peter, do we think that I don't know if we want to call this, like, the Kelsey and LaVita manifesto, is that going to work better than what Cindy tried last year, or do you think that both of these two, regardless of who it is going to go right back out the door the next week?
Boy, based on those plans, it sounds like, yeah, they'd be going out pretty quickly. I think in terms of, like, what you would see for them coming back in terms of a viewer, what would be more interesting, it's interesting to see LaVita continue to fail at Big Brother. Like, be active, be super active in the game, like, proactive, and try all these sorts of things, but continually have them fail. So, like, to me, that's interesting as a viewer, because it's like she almost gets it, but then she's so unlikable within the house that they're just like, no, we're going to do the opposite of what you want, because you create so many arguments and you're so much drama and you're too hard to be around. So I think that LaVita would probably find herself in a compromising position quickly again anyway. With Kelsey, I think she's in some ways more interesting because she's a natural villain in the show. And we haven't had that many, like, strong villain characters in Big Brother Canada, especially one that fits the archetype of, like, this blonde, you know, like, Black Widow-type character who, you know, will use her sexuality and like, will be very angry. You know, Kelsey, she was done, you know? Like, she was ready to go home. She didn't look happy at all to be given this opportunity, which is kind of like, you know, you want to see somebody be really happy about it, like LaVita was, obviously, because LaVita's a fan. But that sense of, like, well, just screw it, I can do anything now, that might make Kelsey even more over the top, even more vengeful, and give her, like a very fun bad guy run for, like, 2 or 3 weeks in there if she goes back. So I think that they both present some equally interesting potential storylines going back in. And personally, I'm fascinated to see how it turns out on Thursday.
It's going to be really exciting. I can't wait to check it out. Don't forget, tune in, 90-minute episode this Thursday on Global. All right, guys, that is going to be a wrap for the happy hour this evening. Alec and Peter, thank you so much for joining us. Taryn as well, really appreciate it. Okay, so for you guys listening, don't forget we are live Thursday night after the episode, not Wednesday this week. So Thursday, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, I'll be live with Neda Kalantar, and we will break down the latest eviction, who's going back in the house, all that kind of stuff. Should be a lot of fun. Don't forget to subscribe to the Rehappy Hour. Go to robbiswebsite.com/rehappyhour. That's happy hour with an R at the front. Or you can subscribe to Reality TV Rehap Ups. That's robbiswebsite.com/rehapups. And check us out on YouTube as well, where you can see Alex's hat and his colorful shirt and his kitchen. It's lots of cool things going on. Peter, Alec, anything you guys want to plug before we get out of here?
You can watch Alec and I every Monday on Shield Show as part of On the Block Network on YouTube. It's also uploaded on SoundCloud and iTunes. And make sure you check out Spencer McRae's On the Block podcasts as well. But Alec and I do ours every Monday evening, Eastern Time.
Okay, you can follow everyone on Twitter. Alec is at Alec Beal. Peter is at also Peter Brown. And Taryn is at Armstrong Taryn. Guys, normally we do a hashtag at the end of the episode to get people who made it all the way to the end.
Rashad Hour.
That's what we want? Okay, done. Okay, so if you miraculously made it to the end of a podcast with Neil and I on it, then please tweet me and let me know, because you really are a saint. Tweet us using hashtag Rasadi Hour. So just Saddy Hour with an R at the front. There we go.
And two D's like Maddie.
Yes, yeah. 2D's like Maddie. There we go. Okay, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. For Alec Beal, Peter Brown, and Taryn Armstrong, I'm Jordan Parhar. Hashtag Rasadi Hour. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye.
Reality TV, we're happy hour. Reality TV.